continue to create that violence in the future.
Why did you change your name to V?
Well, it's an interesting story. You know, I wrote the apology in 2019, which was a letter that I wrote to my father because I had waited most of my life waiting for my father to apologize to me for the sexual and physical violence he had enacted on my body and being, and that never happened. And I finally decided, after watching a lot of the people who had been called out in Me Too, a lot of the men, I didn't hear one public apology. I didn't hear one man taking responsibility or doing deep reflection that we could see about what he had done. I realized I had to write my father's apology for him. So I wrote the book, The Apology, which was excruciating, but it was also very liberatory because I finally began to understand, not justify, what my father, who my father was. And I came to see that it had very little to do with me.
We have 15 seconds, V.
At the end of that book, he was gone, and I realized I didn't want that name anymore. I had no more rancor towards my father, but I wanted my own name that was clear of that patriarchal history, which had never involved my best interests.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for being with us. V, formerly Eve Ensler, playwright, founder of V Day and 1 Billion Rising, 25th anniversary and 10th anniversary. Her new memoir, Reckoning, and Monique Wilson, as well as Christine Schuller, describer. Thank you.
This is your lucky day. You have the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to pay amazingly high prices for some incredibly worthless stuff. Just keep listening, and we'll tell you over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Aren't you glad this is KBOO? KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Non-commercial.
Over and over and over and over and over.
Did you know that independent radio is considered a vector of peace? The freedom from commercial, ideological, or political influence enhances the ideals of a sustainable democracy. We invite our listeners to celebrate World Radio Day by supporting KBOO. You can donate at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Archdiocese of Portland says Catholic schools must use names and pronouns that students were assigned at birth. The Washington legislature considers a bill to eliminate the statute of limitations on child sexual abuse cases. And in national news, the Texas court case that could shape access to pill-induced abortions nationwide. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 13th, 2023. I'm Michelle Coppola. Portland Catholic schools will now have to use the names and pronouns assigned to their students at birth. That's according to a new order from the Archdiocese of Portland called A Catholic Response to Gender Identity Theory. It was written by Archbishop Alexander K. Sample late last month. It says, quote, names, pronouns, facilities use, attire, and sports participation should depend upon biological sex identity rather than self-perceived gender identity. End quote. The American Psychiatric Association recognizes the importance of schools and teachers practicing acceptance and modeling inclusive language and behavior for gender-diverse students. Gender-diverse students that experience gender stressors at school are more likely to be absent, have lower GPAs, and report higher levels of depression. They're more likely to engage in substance use and risky behaviors, and they can be at a higher risk for suicide. The National Catholic Reporter writes that a quarter of elementary students in the Portland Archdiocese are not Catholic. For high school age students, 44% are not Catholic. The Portland Archdiocese is likely to face pushback from its schools. In 2015, St. Mary's reversed a policy against hiring gay employees after a community uproar. The school fired a counselor who said she was gay and planning to marry. A bill before lawmakers in the Washington legislature would eliminate the statute of limitations for victims filing for damages in child sexual abuse cases. Eric Tegedoff speaks with the former president of the Washington State Association for Justice.
Washington state lawmakers are considering eliminating the statute of limitations for child sexual abuse cases. House Bill 1618 would revise the current 3-year limitation from the discovery of child sexual abuse injuries for filing claims for damages in civil suits. Daryl Cochran is an attorney in Tacoma and former president of the Washington State Association for Justice. He says this bill recognizes that victims might suppress memories of abuse or struggle for years before coming to terms with it.
Most of us understand how traumatic it is for child sexual abuse victims, and the trauma itself prevents most victims from coming forward ever. And to the extent that they do come forward, they don't come forward until very late in life.
Opponents of the bill say eliminating the statute of limitations and the ability to implement it retroactively could hurt businesses or entities that may have destroyed records and have no way to defend themselves, especially if decades-old allegations are brought forward. But Cochran says that's no consolation for victims.
Any organization that was responsible for the health and welfare of children and truly had their soul into protecting those children should accept responsibility in those situations where they were engaged in negligence in a way that protected or retained child molesters who were harming children.
Cochran says Washington State once was a forerunner in ensuring child sexual abuse victims received justice, but has fallen behind. He says this bill would bring the state in line with national trends. A public hearing for the bill is scheduled for Thursday in the House Committee on Appropriations. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A Texas judge is poised to decide a lawsuit that could yet again change the landscape of abortion access in the United States. A coalition led by the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine has challenged the Food and Drug Administration's approval of mifepristone, a pill used for abortions. The judge, Matthew Kaczmarek, was appointed by former President Donald Trump and is known for his opposition to protecting LGBTQ rights. Ross Brown has more.
Medication is now believed to be used in more than half of all abortions in the U.S., but a Texas judge could soon force one of two abortion pills off the market nationwide. A conservative legal advocacy organization filed a lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration last November, claiming that a medication approved 23 years ago comes with medical risks. Rachel Fay, with the group Power to Decide, says a favorable ruling for anti-abortion groups could prevent health care providers from prescribing the medication, even in states where abortion is legal.
In very specifically filing this case in Amarillo, Texas, with the intent of getting this judge, the plaintiffs here are going about trying to ban medication abortion nationwide, and that's a really alarming thing.
The judge in the case was a religious liberty lawyer before President Donald Trump appointed him to the bench in 2019. In October, he blocked the Biden administration from ending Trump's Remain in Mexico immigration program. He's also ruled against policies meant to protect the LGBTQ community from discrimination. A decision is expected by February 24th. Fay believes the attacks on the abortion medication are politically motivated.
The safety profile of mifepristone is pretty incredible. It's evaluated and reevaluated. So the idea that this has not been studied or looked at or safe is absolutely obscene.
Since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year, many states have passed near total bans on abortion. Fay thinks anti-abortion groups won't be satisfied until it's illegal nationwide. She predicts they'll then go after birth control and other reproductive health care.
My home state is Massachusetts. People in Massachusetts should be alarmed at the idea that one judge in Texas can decide whether or not medication abortion is available to them.
Medication abortions now account for more than half of all facility-based abortions in the U.S., according to the Guttmacher Institute. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
The U.S. military shoots down a fourth unidentified object, this time over the Great Lakes region. Plus, the FBI finds another classified document at former Vice President Mike Pence's home. With those stories and more, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Canadian and American fighter jets were scrambled. And an American F-22 successfully shot down the object.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau confirms that the U.S. military shot down an unidentified object over one of the Great Lakes Sunday morning. This follows a similar incident the day before over Canada's Yukon Territory and another the day before that off the coast of Alaska. On Friday, Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski said the U.S. needs to send a clear message that it won't tolerate these intrusions.
The message was very important today to say any aspect of U.S. sovereign territory that is encroached upon, there's going to be consequences to it.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York described the unidentified objects as balloons, suggesting they resemble the one shot down off the Carolina coast. The FBI discovered an additional classified document at former Vice President Mike Pence's Indiana home during a voluntary search Friday. This comes weeks after Pence first reported having discovered a small number of classified documents at his residence. In a Sunday interview on CNN, Republican Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota said most GOP lawmakers don't agree with Florida Senator Rick Scott's plan to sunset Medicare and Social Security. Rounds says Social Security funding is like that of the Department of Defense. He doesn't see Congress stopping either.
We're never going to not fund defense. But at the same time, every single year, we look at how we can make it better. And I think it's about time that we start talking about Social Security and making it better.
President Biden met with a bipartisan group of governors and repeated many of the messages delivered in last week's State of the Union. Utah Governor Spencer Cox says they also talked about how states will implement bipartisan legislation, including the infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the CHIPS and Science Act.
I want to give the president credit as well. He's taking victory laps, as we all would, for getting major legislation passed, but he really wants to see this done and moving.
Cox adds there were serious discussions about securing the southern border as well as getting a better handle on the fentanyl crisis. President Biden met with newly reelected Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva to reset better relations. He says they want to fight climate change together and protect democracy in both countries.
We're the two largest democracies in the hemisphere. Brazil, the United States stand together. We reject political violence and we put great value in our democratic institutions.
The meeting comes just over a month after what's been called Brazil's January 6th. Supporters of former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro stormed the Congress, Supreme Court, and the presidential palace there, demanding the military remove Lula from office. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
What some have called a potential ecological catastrophe is just another day at the office for hedge funds and other investors. Colorado River Basin states are working to find ways to keep water flowing. They've got to meet the needs of some 40 million people. All the while, Wall Street sees potential profit. Hedge funds continue to invest in southwestern lands with water rights, hoping for big returns as this key resource becomes increasingly scarce. Eric Galatis has more.
As Wyoming and other Colorado River Basin states grapple with ways to keep a river that more than 40 million people, agriculture, and industry depend on flowing, Wall Street is tapping water scarcity to deliver steep profits. Gary Walkner with Save the Colorado says hedge funds and other investors have acquired key parcels of land with water rights. In the early 2000s, Walkner says you could buy Colorado River water for about $8,000 per acre foot. Last year, an acre foot was selling for $80,000.
So over a 20-year period, it went up 1,000% in price. So that's 50% per year. And that's a pretty good profit no matter what you're investing in. And this is going on throughout the Southwest United States.
A recent CBS News report revealed that New York-based hedge fund Water Asset Management, whose president once called U.S. water a trillion-dollar market opportunity, has invested $20 million in Western lands over the last 5 years. The company, for its part, says its investments work to ensure supplies of quality water. Walkner says efforts to parlay water rights to command higher prices from southwestern cities whose populations continue to swell will likely continue unless federal or state governments intervene. He says the incentive to remove water, combined with a 23-year-old drought and climate change, has put the long-term health of the river at great risk.
There's been less and less water in the river, so we're seeing dramatic negative impacts to the ecological health of the river itself. fish species are being impacted, riparian habitat, wildlife habitat, wetlands, etc. They're all being impacted.
Wyoming, along with Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah, recently submitted a proposal for ways to keep reservoirs from bottoming out. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation is expected to release new rules this summer for dealing with shortages. Wachner believes the role of government should not only be to ensure that specific batches of water are delivered through the Colorado River to customers,
but also to protect the public health and the environment. The government's role isn't to find a way for investors and wildly rich people to make more and more money off Colorado River water.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, cloudy and an overnight low of 36. Now, snow is expected overnight in northwest Oregon and southwest Washington, especially in higher elevations. Portland could see showers, thunderstorms, possible hail, and the Coast Range is expected to be hit hard by the snowstorm. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with potential snow on the ground, so you can have a good reason to cuddle on Valentine's Day, expecting a daytime high of 44. Today in history, in 2021, a major winter storm causes blackouts and kills at least 82 in Texas and northern Mexico. The quote of the day is from American novelist Sarah Dessen in recognition of World Radio Day. Dessen said, quote, "Radio has a kind of magic. There's something about the sound, the words, the music that can instantly transport you to another place, another time, another life." Alaska leaders are concerned that flying objects recently targeted by the U.S. military could lead to mid-air collisions. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It began with a Chinese surveillance balloon taken out by a U.S. fighter jet earlier this month. Since then, there have been three smaller flying objects shot down over Alaska, Canada, and Michigan. All of that has Alaska lawmaker Senator Donnie Olson on edge. He was in a floor session Friday when he got word that an unidentified object was shot down near the Canadian border, a region that's home to Inupiat people and part of his district. Olson, a pilot, says the dangers are very real.
So it's very concerning that you have something up there that's flying along or suspended in the air without a air traffic control clearance. If you couldn't see it because of clouds, or if it was nighttime, there could very easily be a collision.
Olson worries the North Slope's remoteness and sparse population will make it more difficult to protect itself from foreign aggression. Over the years, the Inuit Circumpolar Council has watched increased military activity in the Arctic with a nervous eye. Jimmy Stotts, who recently retired as president of Alaska's ICC, is concerned the spy balloon and flying objects could be a distraction from a larger threat to the Arctic.
Some of these conflicts elsewhere are spilling over and into the Arctic. I'm worried about that. Relationships, particularly over there in Northern Europe, the Scandinavian countries and Russia, how things there could pretty easily, I think, go sideways.
Stott says climate change, which has opened waters to navigation, has increased tensions in the Arctic and the potential for conflict. The Central American country of Guatemala is entering an election this year. Recently, protests were held as Maya candidate Thelma Cabrera and her running mate, a well-known human rights activist, were disqualified after being accused of campaigning on social media before the official start date. Maria Martin reports.
Hundreds of supporters of the Maya Mom candidate Thelma Cabrera of the People's Liberation Movement took to the streets in downtown Guatemala City. Their slogans asked the country's highest electoral authority, the Supreme Electoral Tribunal, to reinstate Cabrera and her running mate, former human rights ombudsman Jordan Rodas, on the ballot for the June 25th election. During the last elections in 2019, Cabrera came in a strong fourth place, winning 10% of the vote. Surprisingly, missing in this country where the last indigenous presidential candidate, Nobel Peace Laureate Rigoberta Menchú, only garnered the support of 3% of Guatemalan voters. This time around, Thelma Cabrera and her running mate Rodas were expected to gain the reform vote for change in Guatemala, where most of the 30-odd parties represent the old guard, the military, and what's known as the Pact of the Corrupt. Thelma Cabrera says she and Rodas plan to challenge their party's disqualification in court. For National Native News, I'm Maria Martin.
On Sunday, demonstrators gathered in Glendale, Arizona, as the Kansas City football team played in the Super Bowl. They marched to the stadium where the game was held with signs calling on the team to change its name. People traveled from the greater Kansas City area for the protest, while others were from the Phoenix metropolitan area, like Cher Thomas from the Gila River Indian Community, a tribe that was one of the official partners of the Super Bowl. Thomas says she wanted to use her voice to take a stand.
There's something that can be said, I'm going to say it. If there's something that can be done, I'm going to do it. If there's something that can be maneuvered, worked out, figured out, I believe in doing what I can with what I have.
The Native advocacy groups Not in Our Honor and Arizona to Rally Against Native Mascots hosted the protest and other events, including a film screening and discussion about the fight against Indian mascots. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Since Valentine's Day is tomorrow, it would make sense that we focus on the heart, and in particular, heart failure. It affects about 6 million Americans. While it's chronic, there are ways to manage the condition. February is National Heart Month, and Eric Tegedoff has tips from the experts about how to handle heart failure.
February is Heart Month, and many in the country are living with a chronic condition that affects this vital organ. Heart failure is the term for a syndrome in which the heart can't keep up with its workload. While it's chronic, Anthony Maholan with Oregon Health and Science University says it's treatable in a few ways, such as a water pill that helps people excrete the fluid that's building up in their circulatory system. He says there are ways to manage the condition after treatments like this.
Limiting sodium intake to 1,500 milligrams per day or less. Limiting fluid intake because fluid retention is a challenge with these patients. Monitoring your blood pressure and knowing what your numbers are after you've talked about them with your doctor.
Mulholland also advises people to keep an eye on their heart rate and weight daily so they'll know if fluid is building up. He says people can raise the head of their bed while they're sleeping to alleviate some of the pressure that can happen from fluid retention. Mulholland says family and a good support system are crucial for managing heart failure as well.
This is a chronic condition that patients have for their lives, and it requires a lot of health care. It requires a lot of support in the home for incorporating those healthy behaviors.
About 6 million Americans are living with heart failure, according to the American Heart Association. OHSU has teamed up with the American Heart Association to provide resources about heart failure on AHA's website. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A new survey shows small businesses believe the federal government should be prioritizing programs, services, and tax credits for them. It also showed that these entrepreneurs support Congress taking steps to modernize the Small Business Association. Alex Gonzalez reports in Utah.
A Goldman Sachs survey finds that 70% of small business owners give the federal government a grade of C or below for the effectiveness of programs, services, and tax credits available to them. An overwhelming majority say it's important for Congress to modernize the Small Business Administration. The SBA is the government agency tasked with ensuring the health and vitality of the nation's entrepreneurial community. Uinta Mattress was one of almost 2,000 small businesses that participated in the survey. It's been around for nearly 40 years in Salt Lake City. President and CEO Skylar Nordstrom says one has to admire an entrepreneur who is confident in a time of uncertainty. 68% of those who participated say they feel optimistic in 2023, even as many business owners expect a recession.
It's not good, but it's not so bad that we're not excited, right? There's a little bit of passion that starts to replace the fear in entrepreneurs.
Nordstrom says the mattress business isn't the easiest one to be in, and as he believes the industry is already in a recession because of shortage and high costs of raw materials, transportation issues, and low consumer demand. Given the challenges, many exacerbated by the pandemic, Nordstrom says they've fared well. The survey shows that small business owners not only want to see more effective directives from the government in areas such as access to capital programs and entrepreneurial development, but also do a better job to communicate about the resources and services that are available. Nordstrom says he would like elected officials in Washington to prioritize small businesses because he says they're the ones making a real difference in local communities.
We really need the federal government to step up, reauthorize the SBA. Those are the resources that small businesses need access to, and we need that modernized so that access is quicker, more timely.
Goldman Sachs calls small businesses the backbone of the U.S. economy, which employ nearly half of the country's workforce. Congress has not reauthorized the SBA since 2000. Small business owners say things have changed a lot in the last 23 years, and time is up. For Utah News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
There's a new farm bill taking shape this spring, and backers of regenerative farming are hoping for more funding, arguing that it could help fight climate change. Suzanne Potter has more from California.
Congress is working on the new 2023 Farm Bill, and climate-conscious farmers in California want to see more funds set aside for regenerative farming. Healthy soil absorbs more carbon, so to promote soil health, regenerative farmers grow a variety of crops together, use cover crops, harvest by hand, and use natural methods to repel pests. Arahi Sharma with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the new farm bill should promote these best practices.
From the 1970s onwards, decades of agricultural policy have prioritized unsustainable farming practices over regenerative ones.
Right now, less than 1% of farmland worldwide is farmed this way because it requires more labor and can be less profitable than industrial factory farms, at least in the first few years. Jesse Smith with the White Buffalo Land Trust near Santa Barbara wants policymakers to reevaluate the entire system.
It's an overhaul of our food and agricultural system, which is rooted so deeply in our commodities, in our subsidies, in our insurance policies, in our financial system.
Molly Engelhardt uses regenerative methods to grow 300 types of plants at Soahart Farm in Fillmore.
Not only are we sequestering carbon, I'm recharging the aquifer far more than the neighbor is. And the water filtering through my soil is clean, has no glyphosate, has no Roundup, has none of that.
The Natural Resources Defense Council estimates if every farm in the U.S. used regenerative practices, the plants would remove enormous amounts of carbon from the air, the equivalent of shutting down 64 coal plants. The current farm bill expires in September. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
While we're on the subject of agriculture, a surge of avian flu is one of the drivers of extra high egg prices at the grocery store. Some people are turning to backyard flocks instead. KBOO's Josh Salem has more.
Bird flu is devastating chicken flocks in the Northwest and across the country. With more than 58 million birds affected, egg prices have surged, and they are not expected to go back down anytime soon. Meanwhile, the sales of baby chicks are booming, much earlier in the year than usual. Many Americans are starting up their own backyard flocks. Per OPB, Flower Feather Farm in Northwest Washington State has seen a dramatic increase in orders. They are up 300% from last January. Many of the families purchasing birds have never owned chickens before. The hatchery has had people come from as far away as Portland and Montana to buy. Other farms are sending birds across the United States via U.S. mail. As bird loss is seldom covered by insurance, biosecurity is paramount. Many owners allow very few visitors to their farms. There are also risks for those turning to home backyard flocks as a way to relieve the high egg prices. For example, baby chicks often carry salmonella. Experts advise those handling chicks to scrupulously wash their hands. They also recommend supervising small children to protect the humans from infections and the birds from traumatic injuries. New chick owners are advised to keep their nest boxes clean, wash eggs in tepid water, and to cook their eggs properly. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Efficiency upgrades are key for cutting energy costs for homes built before the 1990s, but these charming older homes can be green too. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. If your house is more than 30 years old, it may be due for an energy upgrade. There are more than 100 million homes in the United States.
And about 68% of those were built before the first energy codes were enacted in the early 90s.
That's Chrissy Antonopoulos of the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory. She says energy codes set standards for insulation, window performance, and how airtight a house is. However, many homes built before the codes do not meet the standards. So air leaks through cracks and crevices.
Some estimates say that a typical residential building built in the 40s or 50s will lose the equivalent of having a window open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And older homes often lack sufficient insulation, so they lose heat through the walls and roof. And when it's cold, residents rack up high energy bills. But Antonopoulos says energy upgrades, like air sealing and adding insulation, can be simple and cost-effective, and they're often subsidized by utilities or government programs like tax credits. So you can turn your charming old house into one that's more airtight and efficient, too. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 13th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. So please call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Owen Bastable, Nina Mayfair, and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegadoff, Eric Galatis, Suzanne Potter, Roz Brown, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great people like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.